I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu, and we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
We're broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network, located in the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today is the start of a new season of Radio Cherry Bomb, and we're really excited to be back. We also have a new sponsor, American Express Open, is supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. We're big fans of the Shop Small campaign and how Open supports small businesses, so we couldn't be happier about this partnership.
Thank you to American Express Open for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for supporting small businesses all across the country.
So let's jump right into today's show. Our first guest is Alice Chang. She's the founder of Culinary Agents, which is like a LinkedIn for the food world. Alice, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having me.
We could waste a lot of time talking about Alice's background, but we'd love to jump right in and talk about how to find a job in food. So, Alice, where does one even begin?
Well, culinaryagents.com.
No. Good answer.
Well, I think what's really exciting is that that's such a broad term nowadays. You know, I think when you think about how do I find a job is, what do you want to do? What gets you excited? What skills do you have currently that might translate into something related to food? And if it's cooking, then, you know, how do you go about that? And what are entry-level positions? If you have a degree in a particular area, how do you progress that to the next level? And what other skills do you need to expand your career?
What would you say the hot jobs in food are right now?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. I would say if you're talking about a restaurant in particular, of course, every other article is about, line cook positions, back of house positions. So yes, I would say those are hot. I think what we're seeing a lot more of is a variety of, what can you do in this industry that is related, but it could be creative in R&D or could be social media marketing for a restaurant group. We're seeing more and more of those positions, event planning, that are related to food, but may not be, in the kitchen.
I think that's one of the reasons it's not the reason we started Cherry Bomb, but it's kind of one of the things that inspired us to start the magazine, because for so long in this industry, there's just been this incredible focus on the chef. And it's been the chef, the executive chef, that's the be-all and the end-all. And we knew all these amazing people in the food world who really weren't getting the attention they deserved. And when you look at food, it's like you said earlier, like that's kind of a loaded question. You know, there are so many jobs in food. There's so many ways to have a career in this industry. Where do you, if you're into food, where do you even start to look to see what the potential is? Like, say you know you're not going to be a chef, but you really dig this industry. Where do you start?
Yeah, I think nowadays, more than ever, there are more outlets, Cherry Bomb, listening to radio podcasts, as well as magazines, or walking to even cookbook stores and seeing what are the trends or what inspires you, what interests you. And there's also a lot of collaborative areas now that we didn't see in the past. There's much more vocal collaborations around music and art and food. And so we're seeing a lot of folks that are asking themselves, how can I translate my current skills and my experience into this area where it makes sense? Talk to as many people as you can. Go to events that are industry specific. We have an industry event calendar on our website to facilitate a lot of helping people figure out what industry events are people going to. And go there and talk to people and express your interest.
And what kind of we know that you work with a lot of restaurants groups to post jobs on your site. Do you work with any other fields like publishing or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And the structure of us is we never wanted to just be a job board. We knew there was an area that needed a lot of innovation and technology. And so that's why we kind of did a LinkedIn/match.com for jobs. And what that does is there's actually a mechanism on our site that tees up jobs you might be interested in based upon what you're looking at. what we found is that, you know, purveyors, you know, publishing houses, people, even freelance photographers are putting up profiles and searching to connect with people who might need their services. So we are seeing more, you know, even editorial assistants or websites that are focusing on food, you know, that are looking for help, you know, and looking for these people that match to what they're looking for that may not be in the kitchen or may not be, you know, on the dining side service.
I love the description of LinkedIn, yeah. Sort of LinkedIn meets Match.com. How involved do you and your team personally get? Like, if I go on there and I start a profile, and maybe you can talk us through starting a profile, but I go on there and I start a profile, are you matching me up with things? Is it an algorithm that matches me up with things? How does it work?
Yes, absolutely. So we are a tech company, and the challenge and the excitement that we have is kind of bridging this online and offline world, which is clearly we're never going to replace word of mouth and kind of the community. And this is actually, you know, after all, an industry made up of people and hospitality and the way people treat each other. What we do bring is, how do you translate some of the activity that happens day to day online so that you can scale and reach even more people? You know, that person that you worked with for a couple of months in New York, and then you know they moved off to Los Angeles somewhere and you wonder what they're doing, right? And all of a sudden they pop up in some magazine somewhere. So you go onto our site. We really take the design aspect of what's familiar. You know, most people may have a Facebook profile or a LinkedIn profile or use some sort of a social media site where they have to create a profile and then offer a little bit of information. The unique thing that we do is that we do that for businesses and people. And then we use that information they give us to tee up relevant jobs, relevant industry events, relevant, you know, promotions about other things, as well as career advice. And so our goal as we continue to develop the site is, you know, how can we make it even more relevant? You told us that we see that you're applying to a certain type of job in New York, but then all of a sudden you started applying to jobs in Chicago. Are you moving to Chicago? And, you know, making it into a tool that helps you and is really relevant versus just another place where you're scrolling and scrolling and crossing your fingers and sending emails around.
Could I hire culinary agents to take it to the next level and sort of be a job coach for me? Do you have that as an option yet?
So not yet. So actually, I realized I didn't actually answer your question.
It was a good answer regardless.
Yeah. Thank you. We're not recruiters in the sense where we don't, you know, handhold people through the process. We don't vet people to the extent that recruiters would. We have a network of recruiters that we kind of recommend people when we see that the business is looking for something more than what we can offer. But naturally, because of our relationship with the talent side and the businesses, we'll hear about opportunities, you know, beforehand, and people will say, oh, if you hear of so-and-so, and we'll, of course, if we see a natural fit, just introduce them and let them do their thing. But over time, regarding resources, we are putting together an actually targeted resource library that we will be able to leverage the profiles and what people share with us to send relevant information into your feeds.
Cool. So tell us a great job hunting tip. If you're listening to this and you want to find a job, what's your number one tip as the queen of all of this?
Well, no one's ever asked me that. I think two things. One is a tip for culinary agents on the site is complete your profile. Put your experience down. Sometimes people are career changers or they have been in the industry, but they realize they want to do something else. And they feel that putting that on their resume may or their profile may not be relevant to what they're wanting to do. And I feel like the opposite. I feel that that just shows the employer kind of the diverse background that you can bring to that position. So don't be afraid, you know, if you come from, you know, the finance world and you're now applying to an accountant job for a restaurant group, you know, put it down there and put the skills and the responsibilities you had. As far as a general statement, I would say just constantly be out there and, you know, searching, again, back to attending invites and talking to people. I think the more people share with me what they're interested in, then the more I think about them when I'm talking to somebody else and they say, oh, do you know somebody that does this or wants to do this? So I feel like being vocal and going to events and sharing with people what you want to do really keeps you top of mind, and especially because this community is so big but so small in a wonderful way that you see each other and it sparks up kind of, oh yes, I remember you wanted to do that. And
Claudia, do you remember at the Jubilee conference, maybe it was year one, April Bloomfield said, if you work for me for less than a year.
Don't even put it on your resume. Yes. I think in a lot of jobs, you know, it's one thing to get the job, and that's a huge hurdle, but do you have any advice for people on how to be a good employee?
Absolutely. And I would second that comment and say that for a fact that it's not just April that feels that way, and it's not just for back of house. I think the point is that especially in this industry, you have such a diverse, it's generational diversity. You have folks who are excited and just coming out of school and wanting to learn and put things, build their resume. And then you have folks who've been here for a while that want different experiences. So I think, my advice in general in that sense is, get a job that, you feel that you can learn from. You can learn from the people, you can learn from the position, you can learn from the company, and stay there for a while and get what you need to get out of it and give as much as you get or even more. Because, what I alluded to before about how big but small this industry is that you do a good job for somebody that's, a company or an individual, and they talk and they'll recommend you to something else. And I think especially if you're starting out in this industry, there's so much to learn and there's so many opportunities that you may be really great at several things, but if you don't know what you want to do because you haven't experienced certain things, it makes it more difficult for somebody to be able to help you.
I don't know if people realize this right now. Certainly people hiring in this industry know this, but employees have the upper hand right now because there's such, the talent pool's really stretched in cities like New York and San Francisco and Nashville. And if you are hardworking and bright and really bring it every day, I think you'd be surprised how fast you can rise through the ranks. But you need to bring it every day. And you said, Alice, you need to stay for a certain amount of time. What is that? Like when I was starting out, you had to stay in a job for 2 years. That was the minimum. Any less than that and you were sort of a flake and you'd never get another job. April said it's 1 year. I have a bunch of restaurants. We have people who come and they work for a few months and then they decide to move to another city or they move to another job, and then we have people who stay for years. So what's that sweet spot?
Yeah, and that's a tricky question. It depends, right? The magical answer. And I think it depends on the person because things happen. Things happen. Life happens. And, some people have some really good reasons why they need to leave before a year, and some people just don't want to do it anymore or something better came along. So that's always going to happen. But if you're thinking about this from a career standpoint and a learning standpoint, I think the minimum is, a year. Beyond that, I think it's just, you never know. Because nowadays, if you stay at a particular business or, I run a startup, after a year, you both you and your employer have a pretty good feel of what you're capable of and what your aspirations are. And then, then sometimes it just becomes a timing thing because things move so fast, turnovers happen so much. I often hear comments about how somebody rose through the ranks in a restaurant or that type of setting because they were loyal, they stuck it out, they're bringing it every day, and it just so happened that so-and-so left. And they were just the logical next person to step into that because they knew exactly how to run that position or the management believed in this person enough to say, you know what, you proved it, let's give you a shot at this. And then you have to bring it even more, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more of that than people realize in the industry. I mean, my favorite example is Thomas Keller. He started out washing dishes when he was 14. Everybody starts somewhere. Okay, we're going to put Alice on the spot now and make her talk about herself. I looked at your profile on Culinary Agents, and I saw that back in the 90s, you were a cashier / hostess at the Pearl River, New York Hilton?
Yeah.
Was that it? Okay, it sounds like an awful job, but maybe you stayed for 3 years, according to your profile, so maybe it wasn't as awful as it sounds. Tell us about that job.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, often people say, how did you, start with Culinary Agents, especially because my most recent experience has been with IBM. And, I was in food service for about 5 years when I was younger. The Pearl River Hilton, believe it or not, remains to be this like high end Hilton that's like off in the distance by itself in Rockland County. It had a very French special restaurant in it called La Maisonette. And
I think I had my high school prom there.
No. Get out.
No, I believe it. Let's go with that. So It's a super special, magical place.
You're sure this isn't just some glowy memory from the 90s? You've convinced yourself this was like the height of French dining in Rockland County.
And so I was in this restaurant as a hostess cashier. And then I got to bus. I would bus and help out the servers, and they would love me and sometimes tip me out. And I you know, after service, I'd be like, yes, I was part of the team. But I loved it. And it was my first time really becoming part of this type of team that had to produce under all sorts of types of pressure and work together. It wasn't just, I was a cashier, I'm not going to bust that table. It was, you're slammed, we're busy, you know, I'm just going to help because, you know, things are going to go crazy. And so I did that. And then I also was in banquets. So I really got used to, you know, working every holiday, everything. And it was great. And I still remain really close friends with a lot of people that I worked with.
Aw. And then you went from there to another really exciting place.
The mailroom.
IBM.
Yes, I am a mailroom story, actually. I don't think I specified that on my profile on Culinary Agents, but I did. I started in the mailroom at IBM.
And is that as exciting as it sounds?
Absolutely, and more. And I brought it every day. And after a couple months, I mean, I was going to school full time, and I honestly just needed a job that fit in my schedule that I could pay my rent with. But what was great was I got promoted because I did the mailroom thing really, really well. Like, I ran my printouts to everybody, and it was great. And they promoted me to be an assistant. So I was actually an assistant for about a year and a half, you know, up in Midtown before I got pulled into a new division that was forming called Digital Media. And then I specialized in digital media and cross-industry innovation.
Wow.
And 13 years later.
13 years later, I'm here, which is amazing. I mean, I think for me, starting and working my way through IBM the way that I did, I also climbed the ranks in a non-traditional way. And so a lot of people would ask me questions like, well, how did you get that promotion? And wait, now, you know, you're traveling the world. In my last 3 years, I worked out of 9 countries.
Wow.
And I mean, it sounds a lot more glamorous than it seems, but it was great. And I said, you know, I want to get this experience that IBM will afford me. And I was learning, but I always had this feeling that, you know, I bought the domain for Culinary Agents in 2007. And I didn't start it and incorporate it until 2012 because the industry was just changing and technology wasn't where, you know, the timing wasn't right.
So you had to keep renewing for that URL every year.
Oh, no, I went ahead and paid 10 years in advance.
You did?
Wow.
Optimistic. What was the aha moment for Culinary Agents?
So I, you know, close friends of mine who gave me the idea, inspired me. I helped them through the years, just you know, being friendly with them and hanging out. And it was really fascinating that I didn't see much changing or innovating as far as being able to search for a job, find a job. It really consistently across North America, because we operate in like 30 cities right now, it was Craigslist, which is fine. Craigslist is great. I think it innovated how people, you know, the kind of traditional newspaper ads, you know, 10, 15 plus years ago. But it was fascinating that there were no other tools that were available to support career development, growth, continuing education, and bringing together this professional community. So my aha moment kind of came when I was in the middle of a discussion of a promotion, actually, at IBM. And it was one of those, like, typical, I mean, I hate to say it, I mean, if anyone from IBM is listening, I love you. But it was one of those, like, oh, congratulations, we're going to give you all this extra work because you're great, and all these other extra things, but we'll review if you get, you know, other compensation later on. And I said, man, you know, I could do this for another 15, 20 years and be okay with it and have a great career and end a 30-year career at IBM. But I always had this hunger and kind of pain in my stomach to build Culinary Agents. And I finally said, you know what, if I don't do it, somebody else will. And I don't want to be that person that said, that was my idea. And I just didn't do it. So I quit and I went for it and all in.
Awesome. So one last question about Culinary Agents. Raising money is so hard, and you've had to raise a lot of money. You're a woman in tech. Just tell us the quick story. How have you done that?
Yeah, how much time do you have now?
You'll have to come back next season and we can talk about that more in
absolutely,
depth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is probably one of the hardest things I have ever done, and I'm grateful that it turned out the way that it did. But it's not always a success story for a lot of people. You know, just to describe it in a sentence, it's kind of like, it's kind of like this roller coaster of your heart sinking up and down and up and down, because you have to bring it when you're pitching, and you have to show your passion and pitch your idea and convince the person that you're talking to that there's a big need for this and all these other wonderful things. And then it ends up being this kind of roller coaster of yes, maybe, no, come back later. And you know, from your perspective, you just, you know, believe in it and you want to do anything you can to get it. So I would say, you know, you didn't ask for this, but I'll give one piece of advice, is just stay at it. If you're going through fundraising and you believe in your idea, continue to grow your business, as hard as that sounds, while you're fundraising full time. But you can't deny growth in a business. Like, nobody can. And if you're talking to an investor and you're trying to convince them that this is an issue that you're solving and that people need it, the best proof point is showing people who you're solving it for. They can't deny that. So.
Awesome. So our time with Alice is almost up. So that means it is time for the speed round. Claudia.
We're bringing it back.
Yeah, the speed round is back by popular demand.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Oh, I'm going to answer.
This is your speed round. I can answer for you, Alice.
Coffee.
What's in your fridge right now?
Hot sauce. And
of course.
Hot sauce, water.
Wow, that's hot.
Spartan I'm busy. Existence there. What's your favorite food?
Oh, pizza. I'm not good at this game.
Some of these are hard. Least favorite food?
Stinking tofu.
Do you have a favorite cookbook?
I don't have a favorite cookbook.
What's the last book you read?
Setting the Table by Danny Meyer.
Oh, great. Good book. Good answer.
What's the last restaurant you ate in?
Roberta's.
Favorite app?
I don't have one. Duolingo. I'm using Duolingo right now.
Who is the sexiest person in the food world?
Carrie.
Ha ha. Anyway, thank you so much, Alice. You know, you mentioned Craigslist, and I wanted to say something funny. I was looking at Craigslist the other day, and there was an ad for some guy wanted to pay to watch women eat food. And he said, I will pay you to watch you eat. And I was kind of curious, like, what's the going rate for that? But I'm guessing you can't find things like that on Culinary Agents.
No.
No. Not yet, or maybe never.
Maybe never.
Everyone in the studio shaking their heads, no. So anyway, thank you so much, Alice. If you're in the food world or want to be, make sure to check out Culinary Agents and start a profile. I have a profile. Claudia will have a profile by later today. So make sure to follow us, and we'll follow you back. We'll be right back after this break.
Here's what Heritage Radio Network would sound like without donations. It's not as good as the show you were just listening to, is it? Give us a few bucks. Help keep us running. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Click the Donate tab on the top right corner.
Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond with Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm here with my co-host, Claudia Wu.
Hello.
And our next guest is cartoonist Marisa Acocella Marketo.
Oh my gosh, you like hit the trifecta. You're 3 for 3.
I've known you for several years, and I think I was calling you Marissa for all those years.
Everybody
so thanks
does.
For not correcting me. We're really thrilled to have Marissa here. She's the creator of the graphic memoir Cancer Vixen, which hopefully a lot of you have seen. Time magazine said it is one of the 10 best graphic novels of all time. Her newest graphic novel was just released. It's called Anne Tenna, and Marissa is going to tell us what it's all about. Marissa, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here with Radio Cherry Bomb.
We're psyched to have you. We usually have food people on the show, but...
But I like to eat, and my husband owns a restaurant.
So that counts. That totally counts. And I just realized the term food people is maybe not the world's most attractive term.
No, it's true. Everybody needs to eat.
Everybody's a food
person. If you're a human, you're a food person. Yep. So I guess we're all food people. You're right.
Good answer. So let's go right into Anne Tenna. We have a copy of the book right here. I love the cover. Who and what is Anne Tenna?
Well, Anne Tenna is a gossip columnist. She has a blog, and she's kind of a mean-spirited gossip columnist, and through her own bad behavior, she gets into an accident, quote-unquote, and has a near-death experience. Well, she actually dies, goes into another dimension, meets her super-conscious higher self, Super Anne, who challenges her to go back to Earth and change her life for the better. And Anne's like, are you serious? And she basically wants her to go back, and since we're on radio, this is kind of ironic. She wants Anne to go back and be a transmissionary and broadcast Super Anne. She wants her to broadcast love and light. And Anne's like, you got to be kidding me. I'm hardwired to be a gossip columnist. So, you know, hijinks ensue. And does she or doesn't she? You have to read the book.
I'm about 3/4 of the way through. And I mean, obviously, from the earliest pages, you realize that the book is about karma.
It is about karma. It's about what kind of life do you want to lead? Who are you as a person? And it really came out of being diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, breast cancer. And when I had that diagnosis, I thought about what kind of imprint do I want to leave on the planet? And should my life be extended? You know, should my expiration date, as I say, be extended? And I was lucky it was. And I came to the realization that maybe I want to live a conscious life. There's a part in Anne Tenna where she's in another dimension in science fashion heaven, and she meets Max Planck, who is one of the fathers of quantum physics, and he talks about the mind is the matrix of all matter, and one of her angels says to Anne, your reality is unconsciousness of thought. And basically, that's who I was before I was diagnosed. I was walking around living the New York City single girl lifestyle and not really giving karma or repercussions of action any thought. And Anne Tenna does, because she had that accident through her own bad behavior when she blew smoke into her driver's face, who's asthmatic, and they got hit by a garbage truck.
Very fitting for a gossip columnist.
Yes, she's a trash-talking gossip columnist who's hit by a garbage truck.
One of the things that definitely struck me reading it was that you can start over. There was one frame, you know, and it's fantastic because it's a graphic novel. We could talk about what that means in a second. But there was one frame, and I was like, wow, this book is really reminding you that any moment of the day you can choose to start over your life. And I thought that was a really, really powerful message.
I think that's true. I mean, all you have to do is change your mindset and you could change your life. It's all about your thoughts. I mean, we have 70,000 thoughts in one day.
Wow.
And when you're conscious of what you're thinking, everything changes. And that's what happens to Anne. Hopefully she'll stay that way.
So
hopefully.
So talk to us about what a graphic novel or a graphic memoir is. Because you hear the term graphic and you automatically think, oh my God, it's rated X.
Yeah. Well, a graphic novel is a book told in basically comic book form, but it's not really a comic book. It's kind of a hybrid of a novel and a comic book. I don't want to say they're more serious because that sounds pretentious, and there are comic books that are extremely serious.
And you're such a serious person.
And I'm so serious. I never laugh, ever. but it's it's a book told in comic book form, but it's not a comic book. And it's published by publishers like Pantheon, Knopf, you know, different publishers, Top Shelf. And so, and I've worked on, this is my third graphic novel. The first one came out in 1994 called Just Who the Hell Is She Anyway? And back then, publishers didn't really know what to do with graphic novels. And I said, well, you know, before me, there was this book called Mouse. Ever hear of it?
Oh, that was great.
Mouse was so great.
It was such a moment.
That rocked my world. It was like when I read that, everything changed. It was like the earth moved beneath my feet. And it was tremendous. It's still one of the best books ever written. Graphic novel, graphic memoir, or not.
And did I read you got to go to Comic-Con?
I did go to Comic-Con. I went to Comic-Con, and I did a panel, science fiction and sex, and I was like, oh, way to bury the lead, comic nerds. I'm one of them, so I could say that. And, yeah, I went to Comic-Con and did a panel. That was really fun. And I also met Espionage Cosmetics, and I did these really cool antenna nail wraps.
Which we have in the studio right now. We're going to give ourselves manicures and eat some pizza after this.
Yeah, and Espionage, I collaborated with them and did the nail wraps. And, yes, I brought that for you.
Thank you. Could we go back for a second? Science fiction and sex was the panel. So what in the world did you talk about?
Well, I talked about, you know, they said, how does science fiction and sex work together? And basically, anything works when you have a storyline. You could do anything. So there, I just talked about how the sex and the science fiction came out of the story, and that's basically what the panel was about. It wasn't really about, like, oh, yeah, let's add sex to this story and make it science fiction and sex. It's more like, okay, there's a sex scene in the book, so you add that in.
Oh, I don't think I got up to that yet.
You didn't get up to that yet. But, oh, my gosh, my little niece, I have twin nieces, they love the sex scene. They're like, oh, this is a naked picture.
Well, it's like when your Barbies have sex.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably like that because it's removed. It's not real people.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't have any genitals. Can
your
I say that?
Yes, you can. Your characters are sexy, though. Like, Super Anne is gorgeous.
She is gorgeous. She's the perfect version of Anne. She's Anne perfection. She's Super Anne. So, yeah, I wanted Super Anne to be different from Anne, so I gave her really long eyelashes that have stars in them. So she's got, like, freckles of the universe on her face. And she wears impossibly high heels that were really fun to design. And that was fun for me because...
Because you love shoes.
Because
you,
I love shoes.
I wish there was a camera in here. Can we talk about your shoes for 1 second?
Ooh. Oh, they're YSL.
That is a platform.
I love these. They're easy to walk in because of the platform.
Are you like 10 feet tall with those shoes?
Well, if I'm not wearing them, I'm 5'2". So, yeah.
We'll take a picture of her shoes and post it to our Twitter account later.
But that's funny because I read that the first drawing you ever made was of a shoe.
That's true. My mom was a shoe designer. She designed shoes for Delman, and then she got this phone call one day when she was in her office, and it was this woman whispering, and she says, can I speak to the designer? So my mother said, I'm the designer, and she said, this is Jackie Kennedy. I need someone to design my shoes because Ola Cassini is doing my wardrobe, and I'm about to be first lady. And my mother's like, go on. You're kidding me. No, it's really me. And it was really her. And she said, well, Jackie said, well, I'm a size 11. And my mother said, oh, I'm a size 11. We could commiserate. And she didn't mind.
Jackie O had size 11 shoes.
Yes. Jackie, oh my gosh. Yes. She had size 11 shoes.
I have big feet. So I.
Are you a size 11?
10 and a half or 11.
All right. There you go.
But she seems so dainty, Jackie O.
She did not have dainty feet. Wow. Well, you know what? Dainty. You could have dainty feet at any size. You know, let me see.
Thanks, Marisa. Not so dainty.
Anyway. I think they're very chic looking. I like your gladiator sandals.
Enough.
Knows about shoes.
Enough about shoes. Since we were talking about careers earlier with Alice, you know, it's one thing to find a career in food, but how the heck do you find a job as a cartoonist?
Well, I've always drawn. I mean, the first thing I ever drew was a shoe, and I drew these women because my mom did these trend reports, and she would draw the fabulous woman wearing her fabulous shoes. And I did that until I was about 8, and I got really bored with them. until we went to, we had this vacation on in Bermuda, and it wound up being James Thurber's house, and he had all these drawings with captions on them, and that's when I thought, oh my gosh, I should be a cartoonist. So I totally forgot about that and went into advertising. But when I was in advertising, I learned how to do storyboards, which basically is what a graphic novel is. It's like a storyboard of a story. So I have to say that I definitely honed my graphic novel skills in advertising. And then I got really sick of advertising and basically hated it. And one New Year's Eve, instead of, I would write actually all these things I wanted to do for the year, like my upcoming goals. And I lit a votive candle and I channeled all the higher spirits I could think of. And instead of writing my list, I drew myself with a gun in my mouth, right?
That's heavy.
With a line. She was a little upset during the meeting. And it was, you know, the women that I've always drawn, but it was sort of like me. And I leaned into my candle and literally lit my hair on fire. But I realized that that's what I should have been all along, a cartoonist. And that was the first panel of a cartoon strip called She that went got into Mirabella magazine. And then from that, I got into The New Yorker. I wrote my first book, Just Who the Hell Is She Anyway? And then I wrote Cancer Vixen, and here I am with Antenna. So that's basically the progression of my career.
In a nutshell?
In a nutshell.
It took much
How do
more
I get out of that nutshell?
So you mentioned Cancer Vixen, which we have to spend some time talking about. It's still such an amazing book and such an important book. And every time I hear, you know, it's a political season, and every time I hear these candidates talking about health insurance and repealing Obamacare, I get really angry, and I actually think about you from mm-hmm. time to time. I mean, you and I are friends. We're, you know, we have a lot of friends in common, but it's not like we talk every day. But I do think about you a lot because I know your story, as do, you know, lots of people now because of your book. And you were diagnosed with breast cancer, and you had no health insurance.
It was 3 weeks before I was about to get married for the first time at 43. Now, it's like tough enough to find somebody, you know, in New York City. But when you're 43 and single and about to get married for the first time, and then not only do you have to tell your husband-to-be that you have breast cancer, but I had to tell him I didn't have insurance. And as a freelancer, you're just worried about trying to survive as an artist. And then, you know, I let my insurance go. It was so expensive. I couldn't afford it. And it was like a really bad thing. I just dropped the ball on myself because, you know what? I was busy at my drawing board trying to generate ideas, and it lapsed. So it was a really traumatic time. But I was lucky enough to get married and get on my husband's plan, and the insurance premium went up. And, you know, it's a very, really, very big problem because women who don't have insurance, they put off getting screened. And that's really bad because you want to be diagnosed as fast as possible because early detection can save your life. Women who don't get screened and don't get tested and wait, they're putting their lives in their hands. So it's so important for women, if they find a lump, find something questionable or problematic, they need to get tested immediately. So it can change, it can save your life and change the lives of those around you. So I basically, one of the things I do is I work with women who are uninsured, and I started funding screenings, and then from that I started a foundation, and I have a whole empowerment program at Mount Sinai Beth Israel Comprehensive Cancer Center downtown, where we fund free massages when women are going through chemotherapy, and a lot of integrative things, and a whole program for journaling and food, nutrition, exercise. So that's one of the things we're doing.
And you've raised over $1 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marisa, that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I've helped do that, and I'm really excited about my foundation, so, because we're doing a lot of good work.
Congratulations.
Yes.
What does the term cancer vixen mean to you?
Well, it means that, well, basically when I was diagnosed, I was feeling like a victim, and I was walking down Hudson River Park with one of my best friends, Bob Morris, who said, "Look at you. You look terrible. You look like a victim. Where's the vixen?" And I thought, that is like a great term. Glamour magazine had asked me to write about cancer to do like a graphic treatment, and I was going to call it breast case scenario. Thank God Bob said cancer vixen. So I drew myself as a cancer kicking vixen, and I had that on my drawing board the whole year and wrote Cancer Vixen. And it's about putting your best foot forward, feeling empowered, and not feeling like a victim, but feeling like a vixen, and do whatever you can to make yourself feel strong while you're going through treatment and beyond.
Who knew we had Bob Morris to thank for that?
Well, he's a pretty special person.
Thanks, Bob. Since we're on the topic of breast cancer, there's an event Monday night called Second Helping of Life, and it's organized by SHARE, a group that supports those with breast cancer and ovarian cancer. The event is going to be held at Pier 60 in Manhattan, and tickets start at $325. It's a great cause. April Bloomfield is this year's executive chef. It's a big tasting event, and a lot of our favorite chefs are there, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen and Sarah Moulton, both of whom have been guests on Radio Cherry Bomb. We love all those women. So, Marisa, one last question from me. What is your advice to anyone dealing with cancer right now, whether you're personally going through it or you have a friend or a family member going through it?
Well, first, you have to make sure you get the if you find something, you have to get tested, get screened. And then I think do whatever you can to make yourself feel really strong and empower yourself while you're going through it, because your mindset is everything.
And how about if you have a friend or a family member going through it?
Then I would ask them what they need, how can you help, and just be there for them as a friend.
Great. All right, so we're going to move on to a more lighthearted subject, get you off the... to something lighter. So it's time for the Cherry Bomb Speed Round. Are you ready?
Yep.
Claudia?
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
What's in your fridge right now?
I love raw nuts. That's in my fridge. And my mother made these Rice Krispie treats, and I've been eating that even though I really shouldn't.
Old school Rice Krispie treats.
Yeah. And they're with like, okay, topped with white chocolate. Okay, I admit it. It's like awesome.
If that's not your favorite food, what is?
My favorite food is, I got to admit, I love spaghetti puttanesca. I also love cheeseburgers.
Least favorite food?
I don't have a least favorite food.
You'll eat anything?
No, I don't like brains. I think that's gross.
Favorite cookbook, if you have one?
My husband's Da Silvano cookbook.
What's the last restaurant you ate in?
I would have to say I just had the salad at Roberta's, and it was so spectacularly delicious.
Yes.
I loved it.
We might have to change that question because everyone's answer is going to be
I just
Roberta's.
Ate here. What's your favorite app?
My favorite app right now is Karmic.
Ooh.
Yeah,
oh,
they're really
that?
Good. It's like a karmic newsletter, and like they do things with auras and stuff like that. I love Karmic.
If you could pick anyone to play yourself in a movie, who would that be?
That is a tricky question, actually, because we're looking at people to play me in that movie.
Yes, that's why I mentioned that.
Oh my gosh.
We cannot wait for Cancer Vixen to be a movie.
Oh, thank you. I can't wait, too. It's been 9 years, so.
Last question. Who is the sexiest person in the food world?
Carrie Diamond.
Oh my God, Carrie got two votes. More.
No, you're supposed to say your husband. What if
Oh my gosh, he's listening. He's going to kill me. Oh, my husband's the sexiest person in the
Silvano,
food world.
I think you're the sexiest person.
Silvano, so. Oh my gosh, you're the sexiest person ever. Not just in the food world, but all worlds.
Good answer. If people want to find you, they could probably find you at Da Silvano.
They could find me at
most
Da Silvano,
of the time, right?
Yep, or at my drawing board, which is where I usually am. If I'm not there.
Oh, well, Marisa, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're tremendous fans. We just love how you see the world in a different way and how you've been supporting women going through a really, really hard time.
Thanks, and it's such a pleasure. I love Cherry Bomb. It's my favorite magazine.
Thank you. Well, that's it for today's Radio Cherry Bomb. A big thank you to Alice Cheng of Culinary Agents and to Marisa. We have one last announcement. You know the group Feed, right? The one founded by Lauren Bush Lauren that helps feed hungry children around the world. Well, Feed has officially kicked off its Feed Suppers program, so each of us can directly help the cause. For information on how you and your friends can host your own Feed Supper, visit feedprojects.com. So anyway, everybody, thank you for listening. I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu. And thank you to American Express Open for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for supporting small businesses across the country. Don't forget to shop small and support the indie businesses in your neighborhood. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Hi, this is Liz Smith, studio engineer for this program. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Jack Inslee, executive producer of Heritage Radio Network. He's the bomb because all of his hard work and dedication pulling together the brand new, beautiful Heritage Radio website, which launches officially Monday, September 21st. See you next time, guys.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.